If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
And welcome to the HP Podcast, your weekly show about video games from us, the boys. Dave is here with us. Dave, there's a lot. I got a lot of things to say, Dave. But the first thing I want to say is hello. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Happy Halloween. Good to see you. Hope you had a good night last night.
I did. Yeah, we took the kids. That's why we actually moved the show, if you remember. Not you, like the audience, but... we took the kids out for trick or treat, of course. My kids and their cousins dressed up as like the whole Mario squad. I was jealous because, like, whenever I was a kid, all we ever did was like, "Hey, I'm a clown or a ghost or like something." Ooh, and now it's ninja. Like everybody has like cool outfits, and I'm like, is it acceptable for me to also put on an outfit? Like, who would I be at this point in life? Maybe 2B or something, you know? 2D. But Dave, I need to talk about some other things. First of all, whenever we do the little intro, it automatically mutes your microphone. And I noticed that you unmuted it at some point, and I remuted you. And then you unmuted yourself again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that was the first
thing. Would you like an explanation? Is this you calling me into your office and saying what happened here, man?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm obviously not at home tonight. I'm live on location from, we'll talk about that in a second. Okay. As such, I'm using a device that I don't normally use to record the HP podcast. And it has USB ports that were made in 1936. So every time I look at the USB port, it unplugs itself. So what happened was it kind of like jiggled loose. So then I plugged it back in and that muted me, but it was actually you muting me. So there was a whole confusion there, but I will respect your muting authority here on out. How about that?
Well, then? So I don't, initially it does it automatically. Like when we put on like the intro thing, and then I put us all onto the screen, but while the intro is running, it mutes us all so that none of us talk over each other. Brandon, I feel like you respected the mute. Do you have any advice for Dave?
just be you, my friend. Just okay. Be you. Live your best life. That's what I'm trying. Yeah. That's what I'm trying.
You're more than the audio.
Also, it does help out that Dave currently this evening has like the early, what is that, like early 2000s yellow video game hue on him today.
Yes.
The filter that all video games had in that time frame.
And any television shows shot in Mexico.
Yes, exactly. Shot in
Mexico. Early YouTubers too. Yeah. Awful lighting. Yeah, so I do have to explain. I'm live on location at my in-laws' house. Tonight, I didn't want to miss the show. And I called my in-laws when I found out this was happening. I said, look, you have an opportunity to have the HP podcast shot live at your house from your guest room.
Yeah, what an honor.
Like, so make it as gamer as possible.
Right.
You know, because we talked about video games and what I got was Sultan Sheik. So, right. take it as you will, but you know, I didn't want to miss the show. So it is what it is.
Dave, I also admire your like Transformers-esque way of setting up your microphone. Like that's a feat right there. Like that thing would swing down for me, I feel like. But for you, it's erect.
You just gotta talk to it the right way and take your time. You know, this is a marathon, not a sprint when it comes to erecting audio equipment.
Yeah.
So yeah. Oh. You know, a little spit never helps either, or never hurts either.
That was grotesque. I'm ashamed of you.
he's not wrong.
We got some people in the chat. For those who are new or not new, this show, a lot of you, many of you, listen to it on audio, and we appreciate that. If you want to, you can also check us out normally Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube as well at the Bennis Handsome YT. Some of you are here right now saying good evening, saying bruh, saying hello, saying hey all, and of course saying hello, good evening, beautiful boys. We appreciate that. Thank you for being here. If you want to help support us in another way, you can go over to patreon.com/handsomephantom and sign up for the Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Really, it is just a way to show your support for the show. We do have some cost associated. We got to pay for StreamYard to be able to stream this. We got to pay for our hosting, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you guys help us out. We like to be here. So we pull somebody out of our own pocket too. But, you know, if you want to chip in, we wouldn't be upset about that. And also, You can join us over on Discord at handsomephantom.com/discord. Hang out with us, chill. Sometimes not chill. Sometimes it gets a little, you know, weird in the Discord.
A little rowdy.
Always exactly know how things are going to go. But I think tonight we'll try to talk about video games more than we talk about feet. Like, that's my goal.
That would be nice.
In total. But, yeah, Brandon, I've got you down here at the bottom of the screen, and the banner is over your face, so I got to remove that. But are you wearing an Overwatch shirt? I just need to know real quick.
Yeah, I knew I was going to get asked about this. Mm-hmm. It is a Reaper shirt, one of the only, maybe not morally respectable, but respectable Overwatch characters to play as. Pure DPS, that's kind of my role in these sort of games, but... Yeah, I wore it to work, and usually I wear things to work that I don't really care about ruining. Mm-hmm. So if that kind of gives you any sort of perspective as to my logic in wearing this t-shirt to work. But
so I was going to say, like, you know, Poot in the Discord always says, like, you can't disrespect Overwatch, Brandon.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, Brandon's giving an olive branch so that, you know, he isn't tempted. And then you just destroyed it by saying I wore this shirt because I wanted to destroy it.
That's not exactly what I said.
It is basically what you said, though.
I wore it because it might get destroyed. I got to toe this line, Ben. I can't be too overt about the hate. He posted in the Discord last time, someone walking like a slack line, and I feel like I'm balancing that line every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're here, man. We're here, and I got the Reaper merch on. In fact, the year Overwatch came out, I think my goal that Christmas was to see how much Overwatch merch I could obtain by asking for it for people for gifts. And I did pretty well. I got a pretty good haul. I probably got like a half dozen pieces of merch. Nice. But yeah, they're all kind of tucked away at this point.
Now, Dave, before we get into the show proper, I need you to... It's just a brief story, but I need you to tell us the story you told us about what happened at your in-law's house where you're currently on location recording. I don't know if there's fans outside or anything, but the paparazzi are there. But you told us a brief little story. I'd like you to repeat that for the listeners and the viewers, if that's okay.
Yeah, so never a dull moment. Again, I knew I was going to need to be here tonight. So I could have easily been like, you know what, guys, I'm not going to be on the show. But I thought I can make it work. I could sneak off into the spare bedroom for an hour while they're downstairs playing with my newborn daughter. And I can record the HP podcast. But sure enough, there's never a dull moment here. They somehow managed to lock themselves out of their master bedroom. So when we got here around 3 o'clock, we tried to help them. We tried to help them find the key. Turns out the key is in the room.
So,
yeah, exactly. I was on YouTube Googling like how to break a lock and all that stuff. I'm on like a CIA watch list or now something for sure. So yeah, we ended up calling a locksmith and the guy said at like 5 o'clock, I'll be there in 30 minutes. So I'm like, okay, we're looking good. You know, I knew this was a quick fix. 6:15 rolls around. He's still not here. And I'm like, of course this is going to happen. Sure enough, he got here right like about 6:30, was able to finish pretty quick, but I was a little worried that, there would be a lot of banging and drilling and lock breaking happening while I was on the show. So never a dull moment around here, but we squeaked it in time. So we're
nice. Well, I'm glad to hear it.
I guess it's better than being locked in the bedroom.
Is it? Because in the bedroom, I don't know, have because more obligations, like, and you can establish a peak corner early.
My mother-in-law came home from work. and she works at like a daycare, and she, so she came home in her uniform, and she couldn't go into a room and change and shower and do that stuff. And I really felt for her, because, you know, when you come home from work, first thing you want to do is change. And if your bedroom door is locked, like, you literally have access to nothing.
Absolutely.
Especially like their bathroom is in their bedroom, so you can't even get in there. There are other bathrooms, but yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, man.
She got in there
eventually. I'm sure all the people in one room homes are really upset for your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Not being able to. Well, speaking of being really upset, let's get into the video game news for the week, I suppose. That's a great way to lead it off. Anytime you know the show starts off like that, it's going to be a good time. Let's talk about number one, the Bungie layoffs. And of course, we'll talk about the broader industry as well. But this is the big story right now. Number one, Bungie, the developer behind Destiny 2, has reportedly laid off around 100 employees. The reasons for these layoffs, according to Bungie CEO Pete Parsons, stem from Destiny 2's underperformance over the past year and lower than expected pre-orders for the upcoming expansion, The Final Shape. Employee feedback indicated that player sentiment for Destiny 2 had reached an all-time low, and staff had been pressing, staff had been pressing for changes to boost player satisfaction. Furthermore, sales at Bungie are said to be running 45% below the company's projections. This underperformance, coupled with the delayed release of the Final Shape expansion from February 2024 to June, seems to have led to the layoffs. Among the employees affected by these layoffs is the renowned composer Michael Salvatore, known for his work on Destiny 2 and previous contributions to the Halo franchise. While the exact circumstances of his departure are not entirely clear, although we're pretty sure, there are speculations that he may have voluntarily retired, although some sources suggest he was laid off. Almost done. The series of layoffs at Bungie is part of a larger trend in the gaming industry, with several game development companies having made similar moves this year. Despite 2023 being a year filled with highly anticipated game releases, it has also witnessed several studios, including Striking Distance Studios, BioWare, Ascendant Studios, Naughty Dog, Telltale Games, and Media Molecule, implementing layoffs for various reasons. There's a lot. I think I saw like over 6,000 layoffs that we knew about this year. And I didn't actually write that into the story, but
let's say there's even many more than that. We're just like gracing the surface of it. Epic.
Yeah. So as always, I'll take the, you know, at some point here, I'll take the measured response of Business Ben and Bleeding Heart Ben. You know, I definitely have sympathy on both sides of the situation, but Brandon, let's kick it off with you. How do you feel about all these layoffs, and specifically the newest ones, the ones that seem to be impact, like hitting the industry the hardest right now, is Bungie. So, and you've got a long tie to Bungie.
Yeah. And, you know, I just hate that we keep having to talk about this. It really is a truly heartbreaking time for so many people losing their jobs. In one of the biggest years in gaming that we've had, I would imagine we're also seeing some of the biggest profits and sales that we've ever had, coupled with these large game releases that are acclaimed. So to see stuff like this come out time and time again, I mean, every single week we're talking about at least one, and I think we have been for months now. And that's just a very crappy thing as someone who enjoys the game, who enjoys the ecosystem, to kind of hear. And it kind of worries me a little bit. I've seen a lot of speculation as to whether this has been kind of a top-down thing. I've seen some reporting that says this is Sony. I've seen some reporting that says this is absolutely not Sony. To me, it doesn't really matter. The statement and the facts still kind of stand here. There's been a lot of outcry. I've seen people in droves going to cancel their Final Shape pre-orders. I don't know. I can't imagine that Destiny is doing as bad as the company probably thinks it is, and I'm positive that projections were down. I mean, clearly they were down. This happened for a reason, but by many metrics, I'm sure Destiny 2 is still doing very well. I mean, while you were talking, I'm seeing as of 16 minutes ago, a 35K concurrent players on Destiny 2, and that's only on Steam. And I would imagine that you could pretty much secure in that there would be at least that much on both PlayStation and on Xbox, even if they weren't combined. I don't know. I'd have to imagine that even if the sales on the Final Shape weren't to expectation, I'd have to think they still are pulling in a substantial amount of money with the way they've monetized this game now. So, yeah, I it's hard to see because I feel like every single year we get closer to these gaming companies, especially the large ones, just truly, truly acting like the large corporations that they are. And unfortunately, when it comes to profits, people don't really matter. And that is apparent week over week. So, yeah, I definitely feel for everyone at Bungie. And it kind of makes me think that all the issues that Bungie was having over the years, getting bought, getting sold, getting by themselves, being solo, I wonder if we wanted to blame a lot of that on the people that were acquiring them, but I wonder if now that they're by themselves, we're kind of seeing that there was a lot more internal issues that, you know, it was easy to blame Activision because they're the big bad guy, you know. This is why problems are happening, and that could very well be true, but I think this kind of shows that even as an independent entity, that there's still clearly a lot of problems, and not just profits. It says right here that, you know, people in the studio have been begging, almost it seems, to implement things that could bring in more players, and for some reason that seems to be falling on deaf ears, and that's probably the worst position you could possibly be in as someone who is developing or, you know, recording for a game or programming or anything. So very sad to see, kind of long-winded, but it just sucks, man. It really sucks because I have talked about Destiny 2 and I think that it's a quality product and it's changed a lot over the years, but this sort of thing kind of concerns me for the future.
Dave, what are your thoughts on both Bungie individually and, you know, the way the industry has gone overall this year?
Yeah, I mean, not too much more to add to what Brandon said there. I feel like every week we're talking about a new set of layoffs from you know, a different company. And I think what the common thread here is it's always these larger publishing and developing houses. And I can't help but wonder if all of these layoffs are kind of a result of this looming recession. The larger the publisher or developer, I think the more debt they're carrying, and we're at a spot where debt is the most expensive to carry in the last, you know, over a decade. So, you know, as Brandon said, profits over people, that will always be the case. And these are businesses just like any other. So it's sad to see. I know we have another story coming up that's probably related to this, but I do suspect Sony is somehow kind of pulling the strings here. But whatever the future of Destiny 2 is, I think Bungie really has to be commended for kind of what they've put together over the last, you know, almost 10 years. You know, they resisted Activision and they stuck to their creative guns and they kind of kept Destiny 2 the way they wanted to from a creative standpoint. So I'm really curious about where the franchise is going to go. But yeah, because I think Activision probably wanted Bungie to churn out Destiny 3 like a year or two after launch of Destiny 2. So I have to suspect that like a full successor is like cooking somewhere within Bungie. Because, you know, at this rate, I think the only thing that's going to kind of bring all the players back and really stimulate new players into Destiny 2 is, you know, maybe a full-blown sequel. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens, but it's another sad set of layoffs that we kind of have to look at with Bungie here. So, yeah, I'm sure they'll find work somewhere, but still sad to see.
Yeah, for sure. I'll start out by saying I echo everything you guys say. You said there, you know, it's obviously sad. It's obviously sucks that apparently, at least, you know, according to the sources that there's been suggestions that haven't been implemented. I'd say that it'd be hard for them to say they've had a 45% reduction in profits or what was it, income or whatever it was that I wrote. 45%.
Yeah, sorry. I'm glad you meant, I just wanted to point that out because that was the one piece of the article that really jumped out at me is they, I think you had mentioned that they had their forecasts were, or actual is like 45% lower than forecasts. Like that's a big difference. And I wonder where kind of, you know, that shortfall actually came from, but yeah. big difference there.
Yeah. And Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Ben, but something I think that also is very important as we're talking about like the business sense of all this, and I understand it's very sad, but at the end of the day, I would love to see all of these layoffs stacked up against, I would bet probably 95% of these companies are publicly traded companies. And I think that's something that's very important to remember is that, you know, unfortunately, with the way the gaming industry is going, I don't know if unionization is the key. I don't know what is, but I feel like more than ever this year has showed that it might be important. Although you might want to be with the big guy, it might be good for your resume. It seems like nothing is ever secure. I mean, we're talking about the composer. You mentioned that at the beginning, and we've hardly talked about it, but even a guy that's had credits since Halo 2 on literally everything Bungie's put out, literally everything. And, you know, no one's safe, it seems, with this, because once again, I'll say it again, it's just the profits matter and the people don't. And that seems kind of harsh, and I understand that's the way it has to work. Like, there's no other options. But I feel like this makes a case for, you know, game developers moving forward or anyone who touches a game in development, that, you know, it might be something to think about. Maybe these publicly traded companies, you know, you kind of are just a number, unfortunately. And that really sucks, but that's just kind of the way of the road with these big boys. So,
yeah. Yeah. So obviously I'm, you know, very sympathetic. Like I was saying, this sucks. There's definitely money that could be taken from some salaries and everything and put back into the funding. But I also look at like the business side of it, the money side of it, the number cruncher side of it. And I'm like, well, if you're making less money than you used to and you have less money, granted, some people are making a lot of money, but like they've been making that much money. That's you. That wasn't a surprise when you came into the company, most likely. So I do think it can be spread out a little bit. But I also think that, you know, there are very important people who have very stressful jobs that they should make a lot of money. I don't know about that much money, but a lot of money. So I understand like cutting money. There's no way to, or cutting jobs. There's no way to make up that cash by hoping and wishing. And granted, they could have done some more things to drive player engagement, but we've had a like crazy year where people, I used to jump into Destiny at least a couple times a year for, you know, 50 hours a year. And this year, I'm just like, I don't need to. I've got so much else to play. Like, I don't want to play. So it's hard to say that it's anybody's fault, and also hard to say that it's not somebody's fault directly. Like, there's definitely a leadership issue here when you're laying off people in this amount of people, and when they're looking at 45% less than forecasted. I also think that, you know, we talked in 2020, 2021, 2022 about like record profits, and we're still looking at like great profits for a select amount of games. But I think that people probably, and I know this from talking to some people, that people overhired, you know, in order to get things pumping and to get things moving, people overhired. And so now we're seeing some of those people being laid off, which again sucks. But I think that is like a managerial issue where They overcommitted to everything. So I don't want anybody to lose their job, and I'm, you know, sad for those people, and I hope they land on their feet, obviously. But I'm also like, well, what do you do when you're working for a business that's most likely a publicly traded company or part of a publicly traded company, and they have to satisfy shareholders, and you know you're working for that business? Like, there will be layoffs, and I get it. That it sucks, but also like it's the very practical nature of how the world works. They can't just keep people on and expect to exist as a company. So I don't know. I'm really mixed on it. Not on the human element. Obviously the human element sucks, but on the business element, I'm like, I don't know. What do you do here? And I think that, you know, I don't know that unions, they can prevent this kind of stuff, but they don't always. And I think unions are very good in some scenarios and very bad in other scenarios. For example, let's say there's like one person that's underperforming. They want to get rid of that person. Well, what companies, big corporations typically do is if there's one person that they want to get rid of and they can't because of the union, they're like, okay, well, the entire division's laid off. So now instead of having one person laid off or fired, not usually fired, but if they're laid off, you have to lay off an entire division. And then you just say, okay, well, that used to be called, I'm just making names up, that used to be called the sound engineering department. Now we're going to call it the sound mastering department and hire a whole new crew for it. And so like you end up losing more people a lot of times with unions in situations where they need to do layoffs. They're going to lay off entire departments. Now, there are many other issues that unions can solve, obviously, but I don't know. I think unions are good, but I don't think unions are the answer for everything, like we've been seeing a lot of people say. So that's kind of my stance on it. Let's talk about them laying off, presumably, Michael Salvatore specifically, because he's a legend. And I saw a response he was reached out to for comment, and he responded and was very gracious and basically said, like, I love the company. I've loved my work there. Please don't, you know, hate on the employees who are still there. They're hurting too because all their friends are gone, all that kind of thing. So what do you guys think about that? Like, is he done working on whatever he was working on? I mean, Marathon just got delayed. I would assume the soundtrack or score or whatever is not complete for that. Granted, he's probably not got a whole lot more to do in Destiny if he was working on that as well. So I don't know, Brandon, you mentioned them. So what a big, you understand, like, some people getting let go if it has right. to happen, some people, but like,
sure,
the guy it seems weird.
Yeah, I know. And I guess that's also what's kind of strange about this whole news too, on the backs of that. Like, I feel like everything we've talked about, like, it makes sense why this sort of thing happened, but that kind of seems to be a little bit of an outlier to this story, which I don't quite understand. I can't quite piece together why this is happening. I mean, I'd have to imagine there was obviously something else going on that we're never going to know about. He's never going to talk about. He's been very gracious. He's clearly a very kind human being that is obviously understanding in some sort of way. You know, we've seen guys get let go from companies that have big roles and just be completely bitter about it, and that's not the case. So, yeah, I mean, I can't really see a good justification for this, and I want to think that this is a net negative for Bungie overall, being that he's created some of the most iconic, or helped create some of the most iconic pieces in video games, in music. But yeah, I can't really justify in my head a good reason for this happening. And there must have been something else that we just will never know about. There almost has to be, I think, but I can't really come up with anything good to, you know, kind of understand this. I don't know about you, Dave.
Yeah, it sounds like he's been with the company for a really long time. He probably had a very big salary, and he was a liability for the company that's probably hurting a little bit right now. I suspect he was packaged out. Just said, here's a bunch of money, please leave. If not, you know, Your package a year from now may look a lot less. So, you know, if he was getting on in years, that it probably was, maybe he's in his semi-retirement or something like that. But it does sound like he was kindly asked to leave with a nice little walking bonus. So, yeah. The reason he's probably being gracious about it is some of the peons that were laid off, who, you know, maybe weren't with the company as nearly as long, maybe didn't get as nice of a walking sort of package. So I suspect it's something along those lines.
I don't know that he was near retirement, but I have seen many instances in my personal life and observing from afar professionally, just that people who are near retirement, they say, hey, we'll go ahead and give you your pension and also this extra X amount of money if you want to just go now. If not, like Dave said, you can take your regular pension and not all this extra money in 2 years when you're eligible. So you can get out now or you can get out later, but either way, you're getting out. It's kind of a forced retirement, but also they ask nicely. That happens a lot. That obviously was not the case for the majority of people who were laid off, but maybe it was for him. I don't know.
Yeah, and what's really strange is obviously he's been gracious about all this, but I guess on his personal website, maybe he kind of delisted all of his work on these things. Did you guys see that?
He just said gone fishing, I think.
Right.
Where that was the spot where he had filled in like all of his work that he was doing currently.
So he's confirming that he's the composer for Dave the Diver Part 2.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. The DLC.
He's been poached.
He's really moving on to bigger and better things.
Seriously.
That reminds me of like when you have these giant AAA games that require a lot of voice actors, don't get me wrong, and I'm sure they get paid a lot for them, but then they become this big name and all these indie games want to get them, and the indie game is trash, but they're like, yeah, but we got Nolan North. And I don't know what they have to pay them for, but I'm like, why did you spend that much money on this trash game? But you got a really great voice actor, but that didn't make me want to buy the game. I want to know if the game's good, and the voice acting better be good too, but I don't know. I know that was a joke, but still. David Dyer was great, by the way. Go play it. Anything else to comment on this? We, like Dave mentioned, we kind of have a follow-up here, so maybe we'll just roll right into that. How about we just roll right into that? Number two, David Jaffe, known for creating the God of War series, has reported that first-party studios at PlayStation are allegedly displeased with the company's shift towards games as a service. According to Jaffe, this change in focus was driven by the PlayStation president Jim Ryan, who believed that games as a service represented the future of gaming for PlayStation. The shift has been reported, This shift has reportedly led to internal turmoil, with many first-party studios unhappy about the change in direction. The cancellation or delay of The Last of Us Factions is a significant source of frustration, especially since Bungie seems to have been led the charge in delaying that, by the way. As a result, it seems that a large portion of the blame was placed on producer Connie Booth, who was terminated along with many of her colleagues. These conflicts have coincided with a wave of layoffs at PlayStation. And by the way, I'm going to let you know, there is at least one studio getting shut down this year. I'm not going to say who, I'm not going to say when. I'm telling you, there is one studio in the remaining 2 months that we have left that will be shut down.
You're betting or you're saying
you know something? I'm telling you I know it.
Okay. A PlayStation studio.
A PlayStation-associated studio. Okay. As a result, I'll tell you guys later, but I'm not telling you the answer right now. as a result, it seems that a large portion of the blame was placed on producer Connie Booth, who was terminated along with many of her colleagues. These conflicts have coincided with a wave of layoffs at PlayStation. Several employees at SIE have been affected, marking the third reported instance of layoffs within the company. So my title here was PlayStation Studios Are Mad. People are not liking, I mean, apparently the internal, if Jaffe's to be believed, and I do believe him, he had extensive work at Sony. He knows many people there still. And I don't doubt that at least he got their perspective, and their perspective is the studios, they don't want to make games as a service, or at least not as a whole. They don't want to be shifted entirely to that. They want to keep making the games they're used to making, Sad Dad simulators and the like. So I don't know, Dave, what do you think about, the internal turmoil at PlayStation? Is Jim Ryan to blame? Will Hideki Totoki fix it all? Where do we go? Where do we go from here, PlayStation?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I kind of noted here in my notes were, is there any relation to the Bungie layoffs? Because, I mean, as soon as you get acquired by a big company, it can all look great and, you know, our saviors are here, but the first thing they do is look at your balance sheet and find places to make extra money. And I agree, you know, if this report is true and there are people within the PlayStation Studios umbrella, which is quite big now, who have apprehension about this new direction and this new strategy, I agree with them, because over the last 10 years we've seen games as a service take down some of the most revered studios in the industry. BioWare, and I'm looking at Crystal Dynamics. Like, these were like renowned developers that were just torched by this business model, like horseshoed into a video game. And I think for every 10 games as a service games that are launched, there's like one or two that are long-term successful long-term. So I don't know, this delivery model, this strategy, it just kind of seems to be a death sentence to like so many development cycles. And I think it just kind of like breeds scope creep. It doesn't work out too well. And looking at, you know, a developer that has historically made really good single player games and saying, okay, now make that a games as a service. We've just seen the same thing with Redfall and Arcane. Like I really feel for people who are potentially being told, you know, great that you made, you know, these great games over the past several years, but now we want you to make something that's going to generate revenue for a long, long time. Cause it's just so slimy. And I mean, as you alluded to there, Ben, the real question is now that Jim Ryan is out, was he just a figurehead for this strategy, or was he the real driving force behind this sort of move? Like, we've seen a lot of decisions over the past few years since Jim Ryan took over the reins that were clearly just there to make a buck. You know, they're not there to make gamers happy. They're not there to make us feel better about owning a PlayStation 5. It's there to make a buck and make IP more valuable. So yeah, I really want to see what Totoki's going to do when he actually comes in. Is there going to be a change in direction? But in any case, if there is anger, if PlayStation Studios angry, I totally understand, because this is a killer for studios.
Dave, I just want to let you know that since you brought up Redfall, I want to let you know we talked about it last week, that they had 36 players peak in the past 24 hours. They're up to 38. So yeah, the update worked.
We're on the
game's coming back. Now, there's only 10 playing right now on Steam, but I just wanted to let you know. But you mentioned about Jim Ryan, and I wonder, I'm sure Jim Ryan, the things he said, he was probably tired of traveling. I'm sure he's actually eligible for retirement, all that kind of stuff. He's been at PlayStation forever. But I don't know. Maybe the big wigs in Japan said, hey, all the studios are mad. We got to make a bunch of layoffs. Jim, nobody likes you. You're leaving. Like, as we talked about earlier with Salvatore, here's your retirement package. Have a good life. I don't know. I'm just speculating, obviously. Brandon, your thoughts on PlayStation Studios, games as a service, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm more or less just going to echo what Dave said. I feel like making a video game at all is an incredible, especially one with a large budget and a large scope, is such an insane risk that I feel like us as gamers really never acknowledge how much of a risk it is to dump money into something that has a pretty high failure rate. When you look at the numbers and the amount of games that actually come out and even break even, I mean, it's staggering how much of a risk it is to put money into video games. And so I understand why these companies need to be cutthroat, but they also need to like evaluate the market. I mostly just feel for the developers, because as Dave said, it's like you're taking something that is so inherently risky and making it so much more risky. I mean, I feel like, you know, games of service, I don't know that there is a more risky model at this point. I mean, we've seen so many studios try this, and there seems to be no great middle ground. It's either a complete catastrophic failure, servers being shut down within the year, or it's you make a bunch of money. And there doesn't seem to be either enough market data or enough understanding of how this model works for companies to be able to consistently perform on that. And until that comes to that point, I mean, you can't ask these big studios to completely change their models when the risks are so high. And, you know, whether that's Jim or not, it's kind of irrelevant for me. It does kind of scare me for the future of Sony. And I'm really hopeful that, you know, this giant kind of understands what's happening and listens to their studios. And once again, I understand the profits matter, but ultimately, you know, studios being mad doesn't matter. But once it starts affecting pocketbooks, once we start seeing more Redfalls happen to great studios, it will affect numbers. And I just wonder how much of a diminishing return there is on games as service games when there clearly is not an exact formula to it. And there may never be, because it seems like there's kind of a shifting atmosphere around this type of game all the time, constantly. Yeah. And it's even shifted insanely since it's come around, since its inception. So,
well, I think it's interesting too, because you've clearly got a shift towards the live service we've seen over the last couple of years. Those games haven't all come out yet, of course. And I've not been in a boardroom meeting. I've not been inside anybody's head, but I can just feel them saying like, okay, we've got 10 live service games. If we get one game that performs three quarters as well as Fortnite, we're set. And by the way, the other 9 studios, bye-bye. Like, if you're working for one of those studios, you know that a layoff is probably coming. You have to. Because that many live service games are not going to make it. And they know that. It's a gamble. It's let's put a bunch of money out And we'll lose some of it in some areas, but the places we make money in are going to cover that. And that's, I mean, that's smart, really,
that's business,
from a very practical business standpoint. But if I'm one of those developers making a live service game, I'm thinking, nah, shit. Like, I got a 90%, I got a 10% chance of keeping my job here. Right. And that's only if it does really well.
Yeah. And not 45% under expectations.
Not 45% of the, yeah, who would have guessed Destiny 2? Now, granted, we're what, 6 years into the life cycle of the game.
Right.
But who would have guessed that it would be 45% under expectations? Because you assume they didn't make crazy expectations, crazy forecasts.
They probably
a year after they got bought for $4 billion.
Yeah.
Real quick, in the chat here, Jimmy Dean says, going strong. I assume you're talking about Redfall there. Lockmore says, nearing Halo's numbers. Nice. Let's see. Halo is currently, 42 minutes ago, 8,395 players. Woo! On Steam.
There's been a bit of a shift in narrative, I feel like, for the new season.
Well,
they're making some good changes. We don't have to talk about it, but some of the Forge stuff they added actually is kind of cool.
It is, but we're looking at a peak player count for the month, for the last 30 days, of 18,000 for one of the largest IP in the world on Steam, where it is free to play. That is not good.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not saying it's good, but
I'm not rebuking you. Ash says, Keely better reconsider Redfall in the GOTY conversation with those kind of numbers. 38 concurrent players. Now, granted, Redfall is very much, if I was going to go back and play Redfall, it would definitely 100% be a Game Pass game for me. I would not purchase the game on Steam. So I will give it a little bit of the benefit of the doubt that maybe it has like 138 players on Xbox. Okay. But that's not good either. But a free-to-play game of one of the largest IP in the world, currently sitting at 8,400 players. No, Master Chief would be shedding a tear right now.
It's sad is what it is.
Yeah. And lastly, Lockport says, the next one that will succeed is the finals, so there's no room for another one in the year. The finals, we talked about this a lot back in the day.
Yeah,
the finals is doing crazy numbers right now. Now, granted, it's in the beta phase, but it's going to be a free-to-play game. And it's a different one. I'm not saying it's going to succeed wildly, but it's got more momentum behind it right now than Halo has had in 7 or 8 years. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. Boys, anything else to say about PlayStation Studios are mad? Okay. Xbox ditching third-party controllers. Number three, starting November 12th, unofficial third-party controllers and devices will no longer work on Xbox systems, resulting in an unauthorized accessory will be blocked from use error. Microsoft is likely tightening this restriction to enhance security and prevent unfair advantages in gameplay. Gamers who use third-party controllers or accessories, especially for specific genres like fighting and flight simulation games, may be affected. This story, I think, originally was broken by Windows Central Gaming. And then, of course, it's been, you know, spread around all over the place. But I wanted to give them proper credit because this was not something Microsoft announced. It just kind of was found out. But I don't think the three of us are very much third-party controller people. But I feel like there have been times in the past where I have been. Go ahead, Brandon.
I was just going to say, I'm going to have to pack away my Mad Catz controller now.
Dude, okay, so Mad Catz?
Kind of pissed about it.
By the way,
what's my little brother going to play on now?
Mad Catz is it's back. They, you know, somebody bought the
Are they
name,
really?
Somebody bought the name Mad Catz and said, we're going to make actual quality stuff. And they sent me this keyboard a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I don't know. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a 60% keyboard. It's called the Mad Catz Strike 6. They sent me a mouse and something else. So I haven't used the mouse, but actually I did use the mouse, but the keyboard, it's really, I've had a lot of keyboards and I've paid a lot more than this keyboard cost. And this Mad Catz keyboard is legit. Like it's small. I don't love that, but I was just, you know, wanting something on my desk that was different. And, right. The stuff that they're putting out seems to be somewhat quality, but of course they've got the stink on the name behind them. It's going to be hard to erase that for sure. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead. That's not sponsored. I guess it's sponsored because they gave me this, but it was like literally almost 2 years ago. So anyway, take it away, somebody.
Good, Dave.
Yeah, this was really annoying for me, particularly. I know this isn't related completely to like this story, but I just got a new headset. It's a Razer Black Shark V2. I really like it. And I swore when I bought it that it was going to work on my Xbox. It works great on my PlayStation, works great on my PC. I couldn't get it to work on my Xbox because I'm, you know, apparently didn't realize that Xbox is restricting what you can use on their hardware.
Real quick.
Which is kind
of... Sorry, go ahead. Was it advertised as working with Xbox?
I had thought when I got it. Now, again, I got it for free.
Okay.
But when I picked
you
this particular...
What you're saying.
Yeah. When I selected this one from the Walmart and shoved it under my jacket, I thought I recall reading that it did work on Xbox, but I may have been mistaken.
The only reason I was asking is because I believe headsets all are, if they advertise it, all headsets have gotten approval. Like they have, there's something about headsets where they have to get approval or pay the licensing fees. Whereas controllers, fight sticks, stuff like that, you can put them out and say they'll work, but the platform holder doesn't have to recognize them. So anyway, I was just curious if they advertised it and it didn't work.
No, that's exactly true, because I have these Astro A50s and I had to buy a $70 base station for each console.
Yes.
I had to buy one that works only on my PC and my Xbox and one that will work on both my PC and my PlayStation, but they won't work together.
Right.
Scanned it as a carrot.
Yeah, Jimmy Dean says he's scanned in the headset as a carrot.
Yeah, in the self-checkout.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to get at here is, like, I feel of the big three, the one hardware maker who cannot afford to be this picky and not give us choice is Microsoft. I'm all for consumer choice. I think you should give your customers the choice, as much choice as possible, whenever there's an opportunity to give them a choice. And, you know, if Microsoft wants us to buy their, you know, first party accessories, then, you know, Microsoft, you have the resources to make the best accessories on the market. So why not just, you know, pour a little bit more time and effort into making the best controllers and making the best flight sticks and making the best, you know, fighting controllers and all that kind of stuff and headsets, and people will buy them. But in the meantime, people don't really want to buy your consoles. So you should probably reduce the barriers and let them use whatever the fuck they want. So they'll buy the friggin' Xbox. So I'm a little sour about this. This is not very cash money of Microsoft, and Microsoft is normally pretty cash money when it comes to this kind of stuff. So I don't know. This is uncharacteristic to me. And I know, you know, at the moment, the story is they're restricting this because of security reasons, but I personally don't buy it, but I am curious to see if more comes out of this. So I'm, you know, PlayStation Studios are angry. Dave's angry. So.
Brandon, I've seen some people also saying that maybe this, they're going to start licensing more stuff and making it specific for, you know, certain people to be able to work with them, but they got to pay a fee, obviously. There's also the security angle. And there's also, in my mind, a speculation that, I don't know, maybe Xbox is about to pump out a bunch of new accessories and stuff, and they don't want to have the competition. I don't know. What do you think? Like I said, we're not really third party controller right. users or anything like that, but there are a lot of people who are.
Yeah. And I think that regardless of any of the examples that you set forward, which are all good examples and would make complete sense, I feel like this is clearly a net negative for all consumers. And I don't really see any way around that. I don't think I really buy into the whole security risk thing. I just don't buy into that. And I think that this is ultimately a scummy play towards, you know, cornering the market on their own systems, which is never good. There's many, many, many third party accessories, headsets, controllers, game pads, flight sticks, etc. You know, some things that aren't even offered. And I can agree with you and say that maybe they are trying to, you know, up their accessory game. But even that being said, it's like, if the application is there, there should be no limitation through the software as far as I'm concerned. We never have this sort of conversation on PC, and the fact that this is now coming up from Xbox just seems like archaic in a lot of ways. And once again, I'll say it just kind of scummy. So really not into that. And someone in the chat brought up a good point. You know, it really, really affecting potentially the fighting scene. And they had mentioned, you know, flight games and everything. And yeah, that's just, like I said, net negative for the consumer. And we're kind of used to that now in the big business of gaming. As the gaming industry increases, we're going to continue to see things like this. I just really hope this doesn't set any sort of precedent for any other company to kind of rope in some of the profits they're missing out on.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last time. I know that this is not gaming related, but iPhone. There have been times in the past where I've, you know, been on a trip or something and was like, man, I didn't bring my charger. I got to grab a charger and I buy the cheap one because I know I'm only going to be using it for 3 days. And iPhone's like, this accessory is not supported. It's like, it's the exact same thing. You just didn't make it. Come on. Like, that sucks. I think with things like controllers and stuff, it's a little more, I'm a little less likely to do that, to just like grab an extra controller or something that's not licensed by them, but there are plenty of things. Now, the good thing is, this is tongue-in-cheek, by the way, the good thing is that there are almost no fighting games on Xbox. So, you know, they barely have to worry about that. But
right.
You know, there are plenty of, you know, racing wheel manufacturers that are not licensed that make, like, super boutique ones that very few
Flight
people
Sim?
Actually have. Flight Sim, there are plenty of them out there.
Microsoft Flight Simulator.
And maybe it's just that those things will start working once those people pay the fee. To be able to use their connections, we'll see. But yeah, it's a scummy thing all around. And Zoic in chat says, wondering what security vulnerabilities they're worried about that haven't been a problem for the last 20 years. I feel like there was a PlayStation way back in the day. I can't remember if it was a 2 or 3 that did have a block on if you could use third-party stuff, but it like was a very, very small amount of things that it actually blocked out. Hariz is in the chat and he says, at least Microsoft has never had any historic legal battles over monopolistic moves or anti-consumer type things, so we can trust the security excuse. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I saw somebody speculating, oh, they're gonna do it on PC next. Guys, there's no effing way.
No, there.
You could do that on PC.
There's no way.
Because
there's
you can make anything work on a PC that you want to work if you just try hard enough. Okay, so PC will never be the case.
DDR pad, Dark Souls, you know, it's yeah. just, it Donkey would never
Kong
work.
Bongos or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't put this actually on the thing here. Let me make a banner for it. Okay, I'm making a banner. I made it. Oh, see how this StreamYard is actually pretty legit. Okay, if you want to sign up, there's a link or something in the description. I don't know.
Are we sponsored now?
We pay StreamYard for the ability to advertise for them. So
drink balls, Guarana, everybody.
We're sponsored by balls. That's true. They
Dude,
do.
That was
they don't need more, but I will tell you, drink balls, Guarana.
Yeah.
Ubisoft has once again delayed the release of Skull and Bones, now expected in Q4 2023 through 2024. The game has faced numerous delays since its official announcement in 2017. Okay, 2017.
6 years.
Another Ubisoft title described as a mystery large game, I'm guessing Star Wars Outlaws, was pushed into the next financial year. Ubisoft is working on cost reduction and restructuring efforts, resulting in a reduction of over 1,300 employees over the last year. Brandon, I know you are all kinds of excited for Skull and Bones, baby. Give it up before Dave, the Ubisoft shill, gets in here and tells us why this is actually a good thing for the industry. Okay, that we're getting a delay. Tell me about how excited you are for Skull and Bones and how disappointed you are.
I know
that it's been delayed once more.
This has ruined my whole year. This was going to be my game of the year. I'm never going to be the same after this delay. But yeah, I mean, I feel like there's certain things that we just talk about over and over and over. And I would imagine that, like, people that aren't tapped into video games probably, you know, it doesn't affect them. But seeing things like this happen over and over and over again to just certain things, I mean, we've said this game is fucked from the launch, and I don't know how it can get any more fucked. It's almost comical at this point that we're even joking, or that Ubisoft is, almost trying to fool themselves, I think, fake it till they make it type shit here with the Skull and Bones. But this is just a sad, sad development, and I can't imagine anything good's going to come of it. I've said it once, I'll say it again. This game is fucked. So as far as the large project goes, I mean, I guess give it as much time as it needs. I'd rather see this, but Skull and Bones could have as much time as it needs. Give it 10 more years. I don't give a fuck. Just don't talk about it ever again. Delay it for 10 years. I don't care. Just don't even tell us about it until it comes out, please. Because all you're doing is taking my faith away every single time I see a press release. So, Dave.
Yeah. Dave, tell us about why this is a good thing and Strauss Zelnick is actually saving gaming.
Yeah, masterpieces take time, yeah. Boys. You just gotta let it breathe.
Yeah,
Cyberpunk or Skull and Bones will not be another Cyberpunk. You know what makes me most angry about Skull and Bones is, Ship Combat made Assassin's Creed 3, 4, and Rogue like really, really good. And there was a little bit in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but I feel like if Ubisoft hadn't decided to make a standalone naval combat game such as Skull and Bones, then we would have gotten a lot more naval combat in the subsequent Assassin's Creed game. But I suspect Ubisoft probably said to the teams that were working on Assassin's Creed games, like, leave naval combat out for the most part, because we're going to save that for this awesome game that's going to come out in 2018 at the latest, we promise. And yeah, it's just, I can't help but imagine any other scenario where Skull and Bones comes out on like March 30th, 2024, and then Ubisoft instantly shuts down the Singapore studio. I think it's Singapore, right?
You're breaking up a lot. I don't know if it's on me or on you.
I don't know.
We're back. Okay? Yeah, we're back. We're
okay.
Back.
Okay. Yeah, I can't imagine any other scenario where this game comes out and Ubisoft shuts down the studio and transfers everything off to a third party or another Ubisoft studio. And yeah.
I think I understand what Dave's train of thought was, and I was agreeing with it until he got cut off. So who knows what this is going to sound like at the end of it. We'll see if Dave comes back. But yeah, Skull and Bones for me just is a big fail. Even when this game comes out, even if it's good or if it's fun, and even if it sells like 17 million copies, it's going to have this black mark on it forever. It's even if it comes out and it's like, oh, that was actually good, it's going to have that. Oh, remember how bad, anytime somebody's talking about development hell, they're going to be like, remember how bad Skull and Bones was? Like, everybody's right. Going to always remember it for that, no matter what.
Right.
So Dave is gone. He has left. Dude,
and Ash brings up a good point. Yeah, I was going to say, Ash brings up a good point in chat. The in-laws had enough.
Yeah. He can get back in if he wants to. If he's able to, if his in-laws will allow him to, but we'll see. I'm going to send him a message right now.
We're doing it live.
Yeah, this is live. This is how things go. We don't do any edits. All right. I told him, you can come back in if you get reconnected. Don't forget. It is what it is. Let's move on. Dude, think about how bad Skull and Bones is that it was like, nah, Dave, stop talking. We don't want anybody to know how bad it is from our number
universe.
One chill.
Ubisoft lag switch Dave is just spreading propaganda. Yeah. Oh,
right,
man.
Let's move on to the number five. Starbreeze Entertainment's Payday 3 is in, encountering ongoing issues since its launch, leading to a drop in player counts. On Steam, Payday 3 had a peak of 2,725 players, while Payday 2, the predecessor, reached 24,695 players. This is just recently. These problems include connection issues, online requirements, and the blocking of cosmetic content for the PS5 Silver and Gold editions. Currently, Payday 3 has mixed reviews on Steam, with 60% of them being negative. The game is available on PS5, Xbox Series, and PC. Brandon, they're still, like, they still haven't done any updates. They fixed some of the server issues, but, like, how does your game out for over a month? And is this bad? Like, for, it's not just some random indie studio. It's also right. Not like a giant Call of Duty game that could have issues that were way bigger than we realized to fix. This is Payday. It's like an average middle of the road, does decent numbers, but nothing crazy. How does that work?
Yeah, poor Starbreeze. And I'm saying that not to garner sympathy, but just like, this is bad. This is really bad. And it's really sad to see. I mean, I can't imagine the development team feeling good about those numbers. Welcome back, Dave.
Evening. How you guys doing?
It's honestly awful to see this sort of thing happen to a new game. It's very, very incredibly clear that this game was not ready. I mean, that's exactly what's going on here. This game should not have come out. It should not have come out yet, and that is apparent by the player base. That is apparent by the issues. And to even see that things like more expensive versions of the game being locked out of content, I mean, how much worse could it possibly get? You're having issues getting into games, you pay more money for the game, and you get a shittier experience. You need to be online every single second of playing this game. If I were just a casual Payday fan, and I only bought Payday 3, maybe I tried a little bit of Payday 2, I'd probably just, like, I'm done. And obviously the people sticking around are the people that love this series, but what a complete and total letdown. And the fact that Starbreeze hasn't managed to kind of remedy this so far makes me think that there are much larger underlying issues that weren't addressed previously to launch than can even be fixed in a reasonable amount of time. And if it were me personally seeing these numbers, I don't know the logistics of this. Let's just shut it down for 2 months. Because this is embarrassing. I mean, legitimately, this is embarrassing. Make the other one free, shut down 3, and then relaunch. That would be like best case scenario. And I'm positive that they probably could not do that. But that's what should be done with something like this, honestly.
Dave, is this what happens when you take Game Pass money? When you become a Microsoft, you know, shill? You don't finish your game? Does this Pass stink?
I think so. It's disappointing because this is another game that clearly was rushed out the door. This is fascinating because this is Payday 3. So we have Payday 1, we have Payday 2. How did they just forget how to run this game? How did they forget how to operate these servers? It's kind of baffling to me how you can launch the third game in a series, which from a framework perspective is very similar to the first two, and just forget how to make it work. It's really odd. Are either of you Payday fans, by the way?
I've played like a couple matches of Payday 2 and I liked it, but it felt like a game I needed to have people I actually knew play with. So
if, you know, predictably they will fix Payday 3 and in, you know, 6 months we'll talk about a pretty good game that is pretty stable servers. And, you know, we'd all probably check it out. And I think long-term that's going to be the case. This isn't going to be remembered as a game that was just a complete failure because it's probably a good game underneath. It just sucks because this was probably a lost opportunity to pick up a lot of new players. So I think inevitably in the long run, Payday 3 is going to be fine, but it is baffling how they managed to screw this up. So, yeah.
Baffling is a good word for this scenario specifically. Boys, it's time to talk about what we've been playing. And Brandon, we'll start with you, I think. And Brandon, I think you and I, your only game is a game I've also been playing. So I'll riff off of that and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so at the end of last week, I got shamed live on air for not purchasing Spider-Man. And I will say I remedied this, as I said I would. And that's actually all I've been playing this past week is Spider-Man exclusively. And I've been having a lot of fun. I will say that I'm not like foaming at the mouth to play this game. Sometimes when I play games, I like am consumed by them and they're all I can think about. And I am like glued to the TV every single second I'm playing them. That isn't this sort of game. But what I will tell you about this game is that the mark of quality and the standards that are put forward in this game are incredibly high, and that shows every single second you're playing the game. I was talking to somebody about Spider-Man 1, and they were asking me what I thought about 2, and the best way I could describe it to anybody is that if you like the first one, it is exactly like that in almost every single way, but better in every single way. And I think that's kind of the sticking point there is that, you know, the quality is super high in all ways, literally front to back, quality really high. And they've just made a winning formula even better. I think that playing this will make it nearly impossible for me to go back and try and finish Spider-Man 1. Who knows, maybe I'll do it someday, but I'm having a hell of a lot of fun. This game just looks and runs beautifully. I will say, as a side note, me personally, there's something a little bit too squeaky clean about this game for me. I wish it had a little bit more teeth. I wish it had a little bit more grit, but that's not the type of story it is. It's not, you know, it isn't like a Batman. It isn't like dark and gritty. And there can be sad moments. I'm not saying that. And there is some tragedy in the game. I'm positive of it since I played the other ones at least a bit. Yeah, everyone's so happy. I mean,
it's Spider-Man. There's going to be tragedy. Yeah,
I know. But but what I'm saying is, it's coming off the backs of a game like Lords of the Fallen. It really is just like a complete shift in like absolute tone. And obviously that's the case. But yeah, not necessarily a negative, just an observation, is that, you know, even with the darker Venom themes, which I'm getting pretty heavily into now, it still is very, it's just not very gritty. It's happy in a lot of ways, even when it's sad. So I do really like it. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, everything that's been said about it is true. It's just super, super high quality and absolutely worth $70. I can say very confidently in a gaming industry that I can't say very confidently most of the time that games are worth $70. This game is worth $70 and probably then some. So,
Brandon, on the last episode, I mentioned two things. One, I mentioned that I had no bugs, basically. And also I mentioned that all of the NPCs are gay. That was a little bit hyperbolic and a joke, but also like there were like four or five quests in a row that I was like, oh, like I get it. I'm fine with it. But also
sure,
like everybody's gay. There was someone who commented that then deleted their comment or else YouTube removed it because I didn't remove it. That was like calling me a liar for saying there were no bugs or that I hadn't had any bugs, and also telling me that everyone in New York is in fact gay, which, hey, I haven't been in New York in a while. So okay. But anyway, as far as like bugs and stuff like that, you're talking very highly of it. It has had two patches since it released, two small bug patches. And I've seen only one instance. I had a hard like blue screen back to like the main menu one time after one of those patches, but that's the only bug I've seen or whatever. Have you had any experience with that?
Two crashes.
Okay.
That's it. And I've honestly played for between 30 and 40 hours, which I guess. Go ahead.
You've been playing Spider-Man 2 for 30 or 40 hours?
Yeah, probably like 30 hours. Yeah.
What is there to do?
I don't know the exact. I've literally have just been doing everything. I'm going super slow through the story and I'm just clearing.
Yeah.
Because it's so fun to traverse that it's just not bothered me at all, especially with the flying. Yeah, I just zoom around, man.
Well, that gives me hope because I'm at about, I think, 80 or 85% is what it says on my last save. And I was like, man, I'm going to be sad. Because I also do, like, every time something pops up, I go do it before I progress the story. So I'm excited to know that, like I think the dynamic things where you see the little red marks on the screen or the little, I'll have a lot of those to do afterwards, I think, too. So.
That's and good. I haven't fast traveled once.
No fast traveling. We don't need fast traveling in Spider-Man games. I know it's nice that it's there, I guess, in case, you know, you hate video game, you hate fun or something, but for me, that's fine. So like I said, I'm about 80-85% of the way through the game, I think, through everything, because I've been doing everything as it pops up before progressing, and I'm still just having so much fun. Everything about it is really solid for me. And like I said, I had that one crash, but I was in the midst of a fight and getting pummeled and like just spamming buttons. So maybe that was my fault. I don't know. But either way. Oh, the other thing was he accused me of being a Sony shill. And I was like, buddy, Jesus. I didn't respond, but I saw it. I was like, I can assure you I am not a Sony shill, number one. And number two, if anything, I'm a Spider-Man shill. I don't want Spider-Man to look bad. If I was being a shill, it'd be for Spider-Man. Okay.
Right.
Sony, get it straight. Heroes, not corporations. I will tell you, Brandon, that your happy-go-lucky thing, without getting into any spoilers at all, that is going to change. The game gets like emotionally dissonant. I 100% agree with you up to the point that you told me you were at.
Okay.
And after that, I'm like, oh, Lord.
I'm already starting to see some like... Yeah. But I guess, like, I don't know that I want to see Spider-Man rip someone's head off.
Yeah.
But I'm saying I kind of want to see Spider-Man rip someone's head off. I don't know.
Well,
you might actually detach, you know? Maybe it's just because I played Mortal Kombat recently. I don't know. Maybe I'm just coming off the heels of that. But, I mean, I keep seeing these GIFs online, and I laugh about it every time that, like, Spider-Man doesn't kill anybody, and I'm, like, literally scissor-kicking somebody off a skyscraper, like...
Yeah, but you attach them to the side with webs.
Right. Or, like, kicking them into traffic into a fucking box truck or something. Like.
And they just get webbed to the front of it. Their entire body is incredibly destroyed, and they'll never be the same, but they're not dead. And that's the important thing for Spider-Man.
Right.
No, the latter half of the game, obviously, has many, many, many more like boss fights. Big, actually somewhat challenging boss fights as well. It's nothing like, you know, it's not a From game or anything. But compared to the rest of Spider-Man's combat, these actually have been challenging me. And I've been kind of pleasantly surprised at that.
Dude, I've made my shit easier. I don't care.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I want to feel like a badass. I'm just beating the shit out of everything. So, and it's actually really nice. More so than most video games I've ever played, you can adjust the difficulty down to like enemy damage, enemy health bar, parry window, game speed. Like it's insane the minutia you can get into to kind of like tailor the experience to your needs.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been having a great time. I'll probably finish it up. Honestly, I may finish it tonight.
That'd be dope.
No, actually, I might not, because I got to work some more tonight. But I'll probably finish it within the next day or two, and I'll be anxiously awaiting the DLC. Hopefully, it's better than Spider-Man 1's DLC. And I never buy DLC, but for Spider-Man, I will buy DLC. Like, that's my guy. Sorry. That's what I'm going to do. So, I've been having a lot of fun. It does get really a lot more emotional. It gets a lot more gritty. The boss fights are really cool. Some of them are a little spongy, of course. And there's more. I was just fighting a boss right before the podcast that I did not even expect to be in the game. And that was cool because I was just like, wow, I did not expect this. And I've been reading comics for like 30 years and I still didn't expect that boss to happen. So the fact that it was in there and the fact that the way they've done, all the characters, all the enemies, all the characters in this game, but they're making some changes for people who are longtime, you know, lore fans like myself of Spider-Man that I'm like, wow, that's never happened in the comics. That was a cool take on it. And I'm okay with that because it's a different medium. It doesn't really bother me too much. And even when they make changes in movies and stuff, that doesn't usually bother me because I know that like the source material is still always going to be there. You could change it in another medium if you want to. So it's been good. I'm really enjoying it. The story's actually pretty good. There's some weird parts where I'm like, that would never happen. But of course it would never happen because it's Spider-Man.
Right.
You know, there's lots of things that would never happen. So,
yeah. Oh, also,
I'll definitely finish it and platinum it for sure.
I think I might platinum this as well. And I'm glad to see there's no missable trophies.
Oh, really?
Okay. But okay. I'm going to go back on what I said. I played between 20 and 30 hours because I actually just looked. And I think it felt like so much because I've played actual 24 hours in like less than a week, which is, I guess, pretty impressive and... kind of sus.
No, I wasn't doubting you on that, but I was like 30 or 40. And in my head, I was thinking 40. I'm like, what is there to do in 40 hours? Like, I feel like I'm going to be done in a few hours, and I'm probably at like a little more than what you have. So,
yeah it says 24. So that's
okay.
Between 20 and 30.
Well, that's good. I mean, you said you don't feel drawn to it, but at the same time, you've played an entire day in the week. So that's.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It's super fun, but like, so, I don't know. Games like, it's not always From Games. It truly is not. But like, sometimes I get like consumed by games, and it's been fun. It's just not like, I don't know. I would play something else, but I'm having the most fun playing this, I guess. So.
Nice. All right. Well, that's all you got, right?
That's it, man. That's it.
Dave, what do you got for us this week?
So not much, but I did finish Assassin's Creed Mirage, the main story.
Nice,
and
dude.
I kind of wanted to talk about my, as I said last week, I'm planning on finishing or platinuming that game because I really enjoy playing it. And the platinum is kind of do more stuff, which I like. It's not, you know, play the game all over again on New Game Plus because we tell you to. So, but I kind of just wanted to wrap a bow on my thoughts of the game because I think it's an interesting game and context is very important. At the end of the day, the story didn't really hit the way I wanted it to, which is kind of disappointing because there is, you know, Bassem is a pretty interesting character. And I think he's going to be a big part of the series going forward. And I was kind of hoping for a little bit more of a climax, and it just didn't happen the way I wanted to. Before I actually started playing this game, like I often watch reviews just to get a sense of, you know, how people are enjoying the game. I didn't do that with this game because I wanted to go in with zero impressions. So now that I finished the game, I actually went back and watched a couple YouTubers that I really like and just to see what their opinions are. And I do agree with what a lot of people have been saying about how like this game does absolutely nothing new. It's not entirely true. There are some new ideas, but again, context is important. And this game being what it was, I don't think it really needed to do anything new because this was really a return to form. It was really appeasing an older fan base. This is a bold statement, but for me, I think from a purely gameplay perspective, Assassin's Creed Mirage is the best in the series. It just focuses so much on what this series kind of set out to do, which was really fun parkour, you know, fun, accessible, and, you know, somewhat challenging stealth sections, and just really cool kind of historical maps to play around in and like read up on lore and like understand, you know, how, you know, get a glimpse of how people lived like hundreds of years ago. So that's what I really like about Mirage. It took me 20 hours to finish it. I think you could easily finish it in 12 to 15. So that's another plus because Valhalla took 40 and that wasn't fun. It wasn't a fun 40 hours. So yeah, I really like Mirage. And I don't know that we're going to get another game like it. I think Ubisoft is ultimately going to stick with what has worked for them for the past 4 years, which is the big RPG games, which is unfortunate in a way, but, you know, the series is going to live on. So, I really, really like Mirage. I'm looking forward to getting the platinum, but I probably won't talk about it too much more from here on out. So that's all I've been. Apparently, I've been playing Hentai Girls, too. Someone wrote that in the
69.
The Nintendo eShop is wild because you get like Kirby and Nintendogs and Animal Crossing and then Hentai Girls and Doki Doki Book Club. And it's like, whoa, that escalated quickly.
It's Literature but, Club, by the way. But,
and that game is awesome.
Yeah.
Dave, I was in the dock. I like jumped into the dock to write up the stories and I saw you typing Assassin's Creed Mirage and then I saw your name go white and I just immediately typed Hentai Girl 69 and then just went back to typing the show and then you apparently didn't come back in after that.
Oh, I saw it. I did not correct it though because I have been playing Hentai Girls.
It's like, how'd you know?
Nice. So for me, obviously I've been playing Spider-Man. That's been a lot of my week. I was out of town for a few days too, so that consumed some time. But while I was gone, I played a game that Dustin, I rode down with Dustin to a wedding. In the car, he was telling me about this game called Suika Game. And it's a game that was apparently big in Japan and some people caught on and they decided to port it over or put it out on the US eShop. And he was telling me, he's like, you got to play it. I was like, how much is it? And he's like, I think it's only $3. And he starts to like tell me more about the game. And before he was done like telling me about the game, I had already purchased it. And I was like, I'll buy anything that a friend of mine that I know their game taste says you should try this, and it's $3, probably going to play it. So
yeah,
it's $3, whatever. So Suika game, it's like a combination of Tetris and like a matching game. You basically have fruits, different kinds of fruits that you drop into this bin, and then they combine to make other fruits, and you got to get your score high. Like, that's the whole game. It's very simple. There's some physics to it that like jiggle around the fruit. I know that would kind of be your thing, Brandon, but it jiggles around the fruit. Fruit jiggling physics is really good. There's nothing special about this game other than the fact that it is well done and addictive. It's very simple. It's $3. I don't need to tell you anything else about it. Don't even watch a video. Just go buy it for $3. Just go buy it. If you play it for an hour in your entire life, it was probably worth $3, right? So just go play it. The other thing is Mario Wonder, and I am probably about halfway through this game. This is another thing that Dustin and I discovered, our friend Dustin and I discovered that we are simpatico on, is that we were both telling each other how before we progress to the next level, we have to finish everything in the level before. And that's not usually how I play Mario games, especially since there's no, like, not that I'm a platinum hunter or anything like that, but there's no achievements, there's no anything like that. But every level has, like, you have to collect X amount of little flower tokens, and you get wonder seeds, and you have to get a wonderful rating on jumping on the flag at the end of the level, and you have to find the secret exit. And so all of those things will pop up in different icons on when you load into the screen. And so before I'm moving at all in any past a level, I'm 100%ing that level. So that's really making the game drag out for me in a good way, though. Like, I'm playing each level multiple times, usually having a lot of fun with it, and it doesn't feel like I'm just burning through it like I feel like I do with a lot of Nintendo games that are, you know, stage-based, like Mario, especially 2D Mario games are. So it's so good. The game still hasn't had an update. It was perfect when it came out. I inserted the card. There's nothing to update. There's no bugs in the game that I can find. The music is wonderful. The gameplay is wonderful. There's a new little treat for you in every level. There's a bunch of different abilities. There's Elephant Mario or Peach or whoever you're playing as. Like, everything about this game is just sweet and fun and cute. And it's Mario, so you cannot hate it. It is against the law of video games. Dave, you got this game, but you haven't played it yet. You haven't got a chance to play it, I assume.
No, I purchased this game with points.
Yeah.
With my Air Miles. And, it was great because I didn't pay any money for it, but it's a lot different than just going to the store and buying it, because it might take 4 weeks to get here. So
said it was in the mail already. So
yeah, I thought it was something else that was in the mail. So I hope I can talk about this next week, but it might be a while. So
when you get to it, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yeah,
I'm really looking to talk about it again. I hope I'm still playing it by that point. Like, actually, I don't. There's so many games that are still like that I still either want to play that I haven't played yet, or that are coming out that I want to play. But Mario is like one of those you could just sit and like jump in for one level and then be done in half an hour and think about it again tomorrow.
Talking of which, I was thinking about this. Have you started Sea of Stars yet?
No.
Okay,
that's on my list.
I'm looking forward to hearing you talk about that.
Yeah, there was something that was like right on that same weekend that was coming out or was already, I don't remember, but I didn't get to it. And then I just got overwhelmed with other stuff.
Starfield came out around the same time.
It was Starfield. Yeah. Then I spent 60 plus hours in that. And I just had to show you, I just had to make up for the time you guys didn't spend in it. As well. Yeah.
Fair enough. Thank God you did.
Well, that's it for the show this week. If there's anybody who wants to stick around, we'll stay and talk to you while we come up with a name for the show after everything is done. But as far as the show goes, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. You can support us again. Don't forget, over on patreon.com/handsomephantom. We appreciate that. It does help us out for sure. And you can also go over to Discord, handsomephantom.com/discord. We'd love to hang out with you there. And more than anything, if you're watching the podcast on YouTube, leave it a thumbs up, subscribe to the channel. We appreciate that. If you're on listening to it on audio, go ahead and throw in a good old review on iTunes for us. Helps us out. We appreciate you there as well. Until next week, we'll be back at Tuesday, 7 p.m. next week. For those who want to check us out live, and those who don't, we'll see you whenever you see ya. Take it easy. The HP Podcast is made possible by our patrons over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. The following patrons are at the $5 level or above: Toby Ryland, Edward Walton, Josh Cummings, Jared, Poot, Boots, Passive Pixels Edwin Castillo, Maurice Bays, H-Trons, Nuke Dukem, Derek O, Rainick, Christian Snow, Grabalicious, Benji Bop, and Johnny Waffles.